Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we like to have fun and like to have add some value for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So let us know if there are any topics you'd like covered or guests we should reach out to for future episodes. And if you haven't already done so, make sure that you are subscribed to NIMSY Insights. We're coming to you live today on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and of course LinkedIn, where most people join us over on the LinkedIn platform. So hop on over there. If you're watching the recording of this, then welcome. If you're listening to the podcast version of this, then welcome to you as well. Of course, all of our episodes are made available after they go live on our YouTube channel and wherever you get your podcast for audio versions. A quick plug before we get started today, for those of you in the Pacific Northwest, or specifically Vancouver, Canada, I look forward to seeing you tonight. We will be up there at the very first Vancouver Localization User Group conference, and I'm looking forward to an interesting panel discussion up there. So without further ado, we got a quick one for you today. Wanted to talk to these guys for a while. We've been talking for a little bit. We finally got it on the calendar. We're talking about starting the localization right after the design phase, after code implementation. Now, this usually leads to time and quality issues. Moving through the localization process directly after the design phase can offer both time and quality advantages. However, some challenges have to be addressed. And this is what I wanted to talk today to our guests about. And I have Bettina and Carlos from Guilt Ninjas. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Tucker. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and thanks for coming on. I've been looking forward to this conversation. And really quickly, because I don't have an intro. Normally I intro my guests, but I don't have one prepared. I didn't get ChatGPT to write you one this time. let's start with you, Bettina. Let's tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about Guilt Ninjas, because this, you guys haven't been around forever. So I'm curious to hear about that. I'm sure the audience is as well.
That's right. We are actually really pretty new, and we are totally new to the podcast experience as well. So that's our very first podcast experience.
Nice.
So
welcome.
Be patient with us.
Very good.
So yeah, Carlos and I, we worked together at our former company. That's where we got to know each other. And unfortunately, we were laid off at the last layoff round. So and then we thought like we should do something together outside of our company, because we were a great team working together within the company. So we should be a great team outside the company. So we got together and we thought like maybe we should do something like a blog. So we started Guilt Ninjas. And so we're posting every week, we're posting something alternative. So one week Carlos is posting something, and the other week I'm posting something, and it's always something about localization, internationalization, or globalization. And we talk about basics for writers, for example. We talk about something for developers. So we have for a wide audience, we have topics to talk about, and we really like to make the localization, internationalization place a better place. We are really passionate about the localization industry, and we really like to help others to understand basics and to maybe get deeper into the topic as well.
Awesome. And you said you're posting a quick plug to the website. I'll pull it up here. And what is the web address that you can tell for people?
It's Guilt.
GILT.
It stands for globalization, internationalization, localization, and translation. And then hyphen and ninjas.
Very good. So there you go, guys. You can follow along at home. Guilt Ninjas. Here's our website. Good articles, good content over there. Carlos, tell us a little bit about yourself. correct the record. Your time for your rebuttal.
Yeah, it happened with Aquinas. Basically, I was working with Bettina at DocuSign for basically almost 4 years. There I was covering the Spanish language for Latam and for Europe, for Spain. And then also we were having like different roles for like a localization program manager, localization also like manager, et cetera, not to revamp like new processes, new workflows, et cetera. And then that's why after we were let go, we were thinking, okay, we have so many ideas or not, like we have faced so many issues in the different areas from, as Bettina was saying, we were involved in the designing phase with the writers, with the developers, et cetera. So we were thinking that it was a good idea to share our ideas to the world. And then I have a background in QA as well. I was like 3 years working at eBay as a QA lead. And then I started as a Spanish tester for like a WeLocalize.
Very cool. Welcome. Yeah, I have a theory that everyone in the industry has at some point worked for WeLocalize. And if you haven't yet,
yes.
If you haven't yet, you will someday. That's just the mecca of the localization industry. So, well, welcome. Thanks for that quick introduction. Today, we're talking about enhancing efficiency and quality, moving the localization process upstream after the design phase. So this is a common topic, or I don't say common, but popular topic, shifting localization left, moving up localization upstream.
We actually had the idea already when we were still working for our last employer, and but before we could actually implement it, we were let go. So now we want to share our love and our ideas with others. And so the localization team is always kind of, you know, it's always in a company. You know, it's never positioned right? I mean, it's like it's all over the place. No one really knows localization team. I mean, everyone knows about legal and the marketing team. And it's just like I've seen already like a product cycle image. And even though there was a localization team within the company, the localization team was totally missing in action in this image. So there's a disconnection between the localization team and the rest of the teams we should be working with. So we need to bring teams closer together and to work more efficient, right? So, but once we are actually working together with other teams, like with the design team or with the marketing team, and that's what we did at our last employer as well. We implemented SmartLink to actually work together with the designers even better. And more directly, so that they could actually, that they don't need to copy paste their stuff anymore, so that they just can, were able to request translations directly with us. And in the marketing team as well, because it's always a bit difficult to work with the marketing team, but if you give them a platform to work with,
yep,
they're more encouraged to do so, right?
Yep. Yeah, you got to make it easy. Like I said, this is a popular topic. I think there are very few localization directors out there that would disagree with the premise that we should shift localization upstream and shift it left into the process, right? And it's kind of one of those things, like, we can all agree on it, maybe easier said than done. And I think one of the biggest roadblocks to that is that those other teams, your internal clients, so to speak, those other teams don't necessarily always understand localization or understand the real value that can be brought by shifting localization upstream. They might just think, well, this is just more work for me. I don't want to deal with another team. Just translate my stuff and leave me alone, right? So what is kind of the argument that you have for when you go to that marketing team? Like, how do you approach them? How do you pitch them on this?
It was actually quite easy to just introduce the platform itself, right? Because it gave them, it showed them that it was more efficient than copy-pasting text, putting them in a spreadsheet, sending them out for localization, and then getting stuff back and copy-pasting it for, I mean, if you have like, I don't know, just one small image for 40 languages, it's a lot of copy-pasting, right? So this kind of sold them for this idea to use the platform itself. And then Carlos and I thought we could use the platform even further and use it more efficient for the entire localization process. And that's where we can start with our slide.
Yeah, and also like another key aspect was that to be able to use pseudo localization, now in the sense like usually for them to detect issues in the design about, okay, this text box is too big, or we have a layout issue here, or we might have problems there. Usually all of those are detected very late in the game. So being able to get at the design phase something like a pseudo localization to get an average use case, to get possible errors. And then obviously, my guess is that now with AI and MT, it's going to be much easier to get the real deal. Mm-hmm. The only challenge that I see there is that obviously, for example, in the company that we were having 40 plus locales. So obviously, you don't want to be reviewing 40, no, like if you put a designer to, okay, here you have the English version and here you have the other 40 versions, then they're going to be, you have to tell me what is important enough or where do I have issues, no? So that's why I feel that there are, for example, interesting apps going out like Frontitude that they're trying to address that. But I think that they still have to improve, like, for example, to show you in which locale you have issues, things like that. And then basically the designers can focus, okay, in Russian we have these possible layout issues. I'm going to contact the localization team to know if they can provide a shorter version or if we need to change the design because this cannot be fixed, no?
Right.
And then basically this is the most common workflow that the teams have. And as you see, you know, like the designer finishes their work, and then the developers start working on it, and then obviously the localization team don't want to have too much noise. Yeah. So usually until the version or like the developer has a stable version, they don't merge it into the repo where the localization happens. Right. So the localization team can start working on it. And then the main challenges that we have here now is that obviously, the localization team tries to get translation as soon as possible, sometimes using MT, LLMs, sometimes even skipping certain steps on the workflow to make happy the developers and the product managers, no? In the sense like, hey, we have already English version ready. What's going on with the rest of locales? Why are you taking so long? No, and if they don't really understand or they don't get that, it's because we are late in the game, no? That basically almost when English is completed is when we start working on it, no? And then obviously LQFA and things like that, usually it's a very in a rush or like under a lot of pressure, no? Especially for high visibility products or features. So it's like, hey, we committed to have this by this date. You have just, I don't know, 3 days to complete this, no? So that's why we were thinking, no, Bettina and me, that if you go to the next slide.
Yeah. So really quickly, for our podcast listeners, we're showing a slide here that says most common workflow is it goes from the design team, and then it goes into the code base, and then it goes to localization. Now we're going to look at the optimized workflow, which is design, and then simultaneously going into the code base, and localization is taking a look at it. And going, and it says leverage existing localization as the last step. So why don't you walk us through this slide?
Yeah. Do Bettina, do you want to talk about it or should I?
No, go ahead. But just a quick saying, so this is really just for the product UI. We are talking mainly about product UI and strings here. So go ahead, Carlos.
Yeah, no, basically the design team can complete the design. And obviously, at least, for example, when we were working in our former employer, the localization team should be involved there to basically detect possible internationalization and localization issues before anyone start working on anything. And then when they provide those designs to the developers, then basically there are multiple plugins from, like, for example, Figma to different TMSs, but also, like, they can use the API calls, the API methods, something like that. So From there, when you get the almost final version, you can start localizing that content while the developers are working on it. And then basically, because we need to define what is the source of truth, no? It's true that obviously the designs should be almost final, but there are always final changes that maybe they are like 80%, 90% of what the designers did, but the developers might need to do certain changes or certain use cases that were not covered in the design. So from there, when their developers are done, then the localization team will do a final round to check, to make sure that nothing is missed, no, and then translate basically everything, no? The main challenge that I see, obviously, is that with the current plugins that they are out there, usually the keys that are generated for the strings are quite strange or random. Basically, they cannot be defined by the developers or UX or copywriters or anything like that. So we would need to deal with a leverage now in the TMS that basically would be like a 90% match, 100% match, that obviously is much better than they need to translate everything from scratch, especially if it's like if it's already reviewed in context. The only thing is that obviously that this process could be improved with providing the source file with the correct keys after the design phase. No, basically, I think that there are certain apps that are allowing to do that, because here, obviously, it's like what you were talking about, the work with other teams. It's like, who's going to be in charge of providing those keys to the strings? It's going to be the designing team. It's going to be the copywriters. It's going to be the developers. Because now the developers could say, hey, I don't want to work in Figma. This is not my space. I want to work right in my coding. Or like the copywriters are going to be, hey, I don't want to be responsible in any keys because I don't really know how the code is going to be written. So I think that there are interesting apps out there that they provide, thanks to AI and LLMs, are able to provide those keys mostly automatically, and the quality is fairly good. And then basically that burden is removed from those teams. And then the localization team, when you get that a source file that you translate and has already the final keys that are going to be also implemented in the code, when you get to the TMS phase, to review the content that was completely generated by the developer, then you're going to have ace matches that basically you can mostly publish everything automatically, and then you just are focused in the 10-20% of content that was added at the end because there were use cases that were not covered during the design phase. No?
Yeah. So it sounds to me, I mean, like I said, pretty uncontroversial to me, because I understand the value of it, and I think most people in our industry would. It's being more efficient, you're catching things ahead of time rather than waiting to the last minute, because localization is typically just the last step in the process. So it's the downside is if things are caught during localization that should have been caught earlier, then it's always a crunch to try to find them. So lots of upsides. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. What are the downsides to this? Is it...
Yes, they are totally downsides. So just imagine you have a localization pipeline set up with a push and pull automation, right? So once the developers start implementing the code, there will be a push and pull automation, and they will be pushed automatically to the localization, into the localization cycle. But you can block this as well, so that we don't have duplicates, or maybe the localization jobs disappear and new content will appear. You can block this and do a manual step in there, so that you can hold everything what the developers, for example, implement, that everything is held back for that time.
Makes sense. So there's the downside.
Yeah, another downside that challenges that I see is also, for example, how you work, for example, with pluralizations, with concatenations, with placeholders, you know, like that has to be very well defined. So the designers, for example, they don't write, for example, a full name, example full name, no, Carlos Barbero Cortez in the designs. They have to write hello, and then the placeholder that is going to be used later in the code to insert that username in the UI, you know. So I think that there is more like a education, evangelization phase that needs to be addressed. And another one that I see is that, for example, but I think it's also good for the company, is like when the designer is done with their designs and then developers start working on it, the biggest fear from the localization team is that the final version is going to be very different than what the designer did at the beginning. No, that they're going to have, hey, what you did here, all the content is different, no? But at the same time, I see that as a issue for the company, because it's like you are wasting money in the design phase. It's like, okay, if big majority of things are different, it's like, why then are we wasting time or spending time in doing a fancy and nice design? So later on, the development phase can be completely different. So I think that there, the localization team can be a very good place or a step where you can get an average, you know, basically, okay, these teams are implementing 80% of the design phase is giving them. These teams are doing like a 90% of what the design phase are doing. Oh, this team is doing just 60% of what the design, no, the designers are saying. Why this is happening, no? And basically, you can evangelize those teams, see where the issues are coming, and then maybe they have to change certain, you know, in the process. So I think that,
yeah,
obviously there are going to be challenges, but I think that those are good challenges to have because you improve the quality of the final product.
Yeah, and I misspoke. I shouldn't call them downsides. I like challenges better, or even better, like trade-offs. Right, because yeah, it's your or calculated risks, I would say. Right, like you're going into it knowing that, all right, some of the stuff is going to change, when it gets to the dev team, and there's still going to be work to be done on the back end, but we're willing to accept that because the benefits of doing it this way are so much better.
Yeah, and also yeah, like sure, for example, like you have a most likely, Not 100% of context, but you're gonna have a really high rate of, okay, this is a thing where it's used, you know, and you can know that it's because it's a title or it's a button or it's like a, I don't know. There are, even for example, you can flag to the content team like, hey, this button you're calling it this way, but or PM says that 90% of the buttons are called in that way. Are you sure that? You want to use that verbiage for it. So I think that is obviously, there are like good ways to do it, no?
Right, yeah. Well, very cool. Anything else to say on this topic before we go back to, I want to talk a little bit more about Guilt Ninjas. And just because why do I want to talk about Guilt Ninjas? Because it's something that's near and dear to my heart, right? Like we started NIMSY years and years ago, with the idea of spreading knowledge for the language services industry. So I love it when I see blogs or news sites and such come up, because it's what I do. It's what I do at NIMSY. It's what we do at Multilingual, right? So, what's the future for Guilt Ninjas? Is it just a blog? Is it just a fun little thing that you're doing to help share some of the knowledge that you've accumulated over the years with people? What's the future hold?
Well, I think the future is that we try to post at least every week something. So this is, a small goal for us to do. We have to see how it's going to be when we are fully employed again.
Right.
Some point.
Exactly.
but we still want to, so the future, we talked about it already, Carlos and I, and the future is that we still want to keep it up because we're really passionate about it and we really would like to talk more about localization and internationalization And it's just something, I mean, we know most topics were already talked about, but we just like to talk about it again.
There's nothing new under the sun. Everything's already been talked about. So if that's your bar for creating content, you're never going to create any content, right?
That's right. And you have to start somewhere, right? So
yeah, and everyone has their own interesting and unique take on it, right? I'm going to go be speaking on a panel tonight, and the topic is technology and AI, right?
Oh, nice.
It's been talked about before, right? So if I had this, you know, I don't want to talk about it because it's already been talked about. You know, people want to hear about it. So,
yes.
Dan, also I feel that it's important to mention of the audience that we want to reach. Not because we also feel that all the localization content usually is created for localizers, you know, in the sense that usually we tend to look for our own audience. No, it's like when you're talking about how to improve processes, it's like you are just focusing on how the localization team can do something, or how the globalization team can do whatever. But for us, it's more to explain marketers, writers, designers, developers, it's like how they should do things so that their lives are much easier, but also then we get some benefits as well, no? So it's like a more or less like a trying to change the focus instead of being just focused on us, no? To try to get other people to say, hey, this is important because, no, for example, like what we are talking about this on this topic, you know, is obviously it's a huge win for the localization team, but at the same time, the company and the other teams can also benefit from in other areas, no? So it's a trade-off that I think is very, very good.
That's a really important point, right? Because I agree. And in the localization space in our industry, we spend a lot of time talking to each other about things. And sometimes we forget that not everybody thinks like us. So who's talking to the marketing teams? Who's talking to the product teams? And it's a different message. It's a different pitch. So we do have a comment here. Hold on. Let me find it here. Scroll up. All right, here we go. Kaija Richter says, or Kaija Richter, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. I'm sorry, Kaija. Why is localization still a pain point in those well-established companies that have been around for a while? I can see that localization can be a rocky road for a startup, but I'm always surprised that bigger, well-established companies still struggle in the localization department. Yeah, that's the question.
I think we are all amazed, and we are all, you know, we are all in what the heck. I mean, it's like I think a lot of us know from the localization industry that this is really a pain point, and it's just like the localization team is always kind of the underdogs of the company. I mean, it's just like I wish there would be known like the legal team and the marketing team, for example, or the sales team. Everyone knows about them, but the localization team is always kind of undercover and like, yeah, they do some translations there, right? If they even know about it.
Well,
so,
I mean, typically, this is what I say. Typically, if the CEO knows about the localization team, someone messed up. Right.
Yeah.
It's because localization is supposed to be behind the scenes and no one really knows or cares about it until there's a mistranslation that's cost the company a lot of money. Right. And that's fine. Right. Like it's fine to be in the background. But I mean, to this question right here, why is localization still a pain point? It can be a rocky road for a startup, but I'm always surprised that bigger, well-established companies still struggle in the localization department. Well, there's some very competent localization professionals working in localization departments on the client side. And so any of my comments that I'm about to make aren't to disparage them. Some very, very intelligent, very smart, very competent people on the client side working in the localization department. And their challenge and our challenge as an industry is getting everybody else in the organization to understand what localization is and the value that it brings. Because people don't understand localization, therefore they don't understand the value that localization brings. Therefore, they're afraid to truly invest into localization, right? And this is why you see, what department is localization going to report into? I've seen localization departments reporting into marketing, reporting into product, reporting into content, help, technical documentation. They're all over the place. Sometimes there's multiple localization departments at a larger company. And to the point of the question here, why do larger companies struggle with it? Well, the larger the company is, the more people there are in that company to not care about localization, right? Because the localization team doesn't typically grow in proportion to the rest of the company. I've seen companies with 50 to 100 people in the company, and they have a team of two localization specialists. I've seen companies with 1,000 to 5,000 people, and they have a team of two localization specialists, right? So typically the localization department's not growing in proportion to the rest of the company, which is fine, but it becomes a struggle to gain relevancy in the organization, would be my input.
Yeah, totally agree, Tucker. Totally agree. It's all about lobbying work as well within the company, right? I mean, to the big picture, always be present and always be like, crash in meetings and say, "Yay, we are from the localization team. We can help you here."
You got to be a salesperson, right? You got to be a salesperson. This is why I tell clients, the folks that we work with here at IMSI, is you gotta treat, I know you're on the client side, you're not an LSP, you're not selling services, but you kind of are. So repurpose some of those project managers and make them go sit in meetings with the marketing department, make them go sit in meetings with the product department, build those relationships. And it's very similar to what an LSP would do with their account managers. Right, building those relationships with their clients. As if you're working on the client side in the localization department, you have clients. You typically would call them stakeholders or something because they're not technically clients, but for all intents and purposes, they are clients.
In our last company, Carlos and I, we went actually on tour, on a localization tour. We went to different departments and had presentations and were kind of lobbying for our trade, right? And what we can do for them and how they can help us and how we can make things more efficient. And basically, bottom line, how we can work together and that we are there to help them.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's true that it's very hard for certain people to understand, no, and this is why I think this conversation is good to move upstream to the localization process, because for a lot of people, it's very hard to understand. It's like, okay, why we have everything ready? Why English is ready? Why now we have to wait 10 days to get the rest rolling? You know what I mean? It's like, and it's true, no? It's, especially if you have a company that their main focus is the US, and then obviously, yeah, other international markets are important, but not so important. Then for the company, it's like, okay, we will take certain risk, no? Because the value that you are providing is too late in the game, no? So I think that that's something that it's key. Like, that's why I think that a lot of companies are starting to try to use, and obviously for economical reasons, but I think that it's also for speed reasons of say, okay, let's start using MT, AI, and then from there I'm editing. So instead of the need to wait 5 to 10 days to get the translation back, now we can have it from 3 to 5 days,
yeah,
everything back, you know? So it's something that everything is related with the SPM. Also what you were talking about, the added value. I think that sometimes, maybe because big majority of us have like a technical background, linguistic background, none of us have like a marketing or like a background, like we don't know how to present what is the value that we provide. You know, like usually what I see in companies is, oh, we translated 2 millions of words.
Yeah.
But that usually doesn't provide
no
any.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, okay, you did whatever English did. Thank you.
Exactly.
But you need to be able to provide, okay, we were able to grow in this market this amount because of this, because of that. But obviously you need, what you were talking about, the size of the team, no? You need somebody in the team that has the time to put that effort in providing all that value so the company understands that. No, but when you have to choose between, do I need to provide this content localized or can I work on this pitch, no? Yeah. Then.
And it's a specific skill set, right? Because a lot of, once again, not disparaging localization leaders on the client side, but a lot of us in the industry, we don't understand, we can't communicate the value that we add because we don't understand the value that we add ourselves. We're going to people saying, oh, look at my quality scores and look at how many words I translated. Nobody cares, right? You've got to speak the language of your stakeholders. So no one cares about your quality assurance KPIs, right? No one cares about your on-time delivery KPIs even, unless they're late. If it's late, they care, right? But okay. If you're hitting them, no one cares, right? So localization leaders, go find out, don't report your KPIs. Go ask your stakeholders, what are their KPIs? What do they need in order to accomplish their goals and get their bonuses at the end of the years? Then talk about that. If you're talking to a marketing team, talk about click-through rates. Talk about impressions. Do some A/B testing. Marketing teams love A/B testing, right? Talk about international user experience. If you're talking to product teams, talk about bugs, bug counts, and bug count reductions in the localized builds. If you're talking to the finance team, talk about money saved due to blah, 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 TMs. You know, it sucks that nobody understands localization, but it can actually be great that nobody understands localization. Why? Because I can go to a finance director and say, we're using this excellent new technology called translation memories. And because of that, we've saved blah, 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 money, right? And you just do the math. And wow, that sounds really impressive. I mean, they don't need to know that TMs have been around for 20 years, 30 years, however long they've been around, right? So lots of options out there, but you have to talk the language of your stakeholders. We got another comment here. Kyle Chow, let's bring this up. Kyle says, for startups, I'd imagine it could be easier to advocate for localization best practices since everything is constantly changing anyways, and there's generally less people. The well-established companies have had deep-rooted processes for many years, and people will think, well, what we've done has worked for this long. Why is localization trying to change what isn't broken? This is an excellent point, Kyle, is that I think localization departments can be much more even mature in startups and smaller companies. Why? Because they're building from the ground up with today's technology. Right. So if I start a company today, I get funding. And well, first of all, companies today are international from the get-go. Like, it's not uncommon. Like, when a company gets started, they already have a global strategy. It's not like decades ago where a company would get started and, hey, people in our home market like our product. Let's expand. And then they have to figure out how to do localization. Companies today are starting with globalization in mind, right? So that's the first thing. So they're building it from scratch. They're not having to implement force localization processes on top of existing processes, right? And secondly, if I start building a localization program today, I'm going to be implementing the latest and greatest technologies out there on the market as of 2024. If I started building 10 years ago, well, I implemented, I always use this as an example. If I started 10, 20 years ago, well, I have World Server. Right, I can't tell you how many clients I've talked to that have a World Server implementation from 20 years ago that they can't get out of. But the technology's old, it's tired, it's not taking advantage of the latest things, but they built their whole program around it. So it's hard to implement the latest and greatest technology because all of their entire ecosystem is built around technology from 20 years ago, right? So it does provide more flexibility in that regard.
Yeah, that's something that is true that I see a lot of companies having that mistake of getting too immersed or too involved in a particular system, not in the sense of you should try to build all the localization, for example, pipelines and all that, a bit agnostic in the sense that obviously at the end of the line, you have a connection to that particular TMS and you're going to have something related to that. But it should be done in a way that when, if you need to change TMS or technology for whatever reason, is much easier than when you are so embedded, you know, in that particular product.
Yeah.
Obviously, for that particular product, it's perfect because it's like, okay, I got these people for at least 3 years, no? But for the company that is using those services, I think that they have to be a bit selfish in the sense of say, okay, let's do this in the most agnostic way. So if we have to change from TMS 1 to TMS 2, we need a work of, I don't know, 5 months to work on it, and that's all. We don't need 3 years work to do that, no?
Yeah, yeah. Let's do one more question here, and because I saw Kaya. I'm gonna pretend you're German, and I'm gonna say it's Kaya, but I don't know because Kaya Richter sounds German. I have interviewed with a few bigger companies in the past 2 months, and the first thing the Loke team brings up is that they struggle to be seen. Some of the Loke teams existed for 5 to 10 years, and I always wondered why they don't take the initiative to advocate for the Loke team, spread awareness, train other departments. I love that Bettina and Carlos offer a solution to that issue. Me too. But yeah, I mean, a lot of times. Why don't they do it? Just because they don't have resources. I mean, let's be real. Localization departments are underfunded sometimes, and I have to keep the trains running. I have to keep delivering. I can't afford, I don't have budget to hire account managers, right, to go talk to other departments. So a lot of times it's just that. A lot of times they don't understand. And I think, frankly, once again, not disparaging, well, I kind of end this disparaging, but I think a lot of times localization directors are trying to shove square pegs into round holes. They're going to the marketing department and saying, you need to understand the value that we add, right? And they're trying to educate their stakeholders. And I hate it when we talk about educating our stakeholders about localization. Yes, they do need to be educated. But it's the mindset, like, I need to educate you. It's putting ourselves, it's kind of presumptuous, it's kind of contemptuous, right? No one wants to be educated. They want to be understood, right? So as a localization team, before you educate, go in and talk to them and understand what are their values, what's important to them. Don't talk about what's important to you. Talk about what's important to them. And in order to do that, you've got to understand them, which means you got to talk to them and build a relationship. Right. And at NIMC, we work with companies that this is what we work on with them, like their strategy for being seen internally. Seen companies do emailing lists. So monthly emails, monthly newsletters that go out to the entire organization. Here's a bunch of interesting facts about our global audiences. This month we're going to do a highlight on Latin America, and here's some cool things that you should know. But once again, it's not talking about, here's our LQA scores for Latin American Spanish. It's talking about things that are interesting to them. And then, oh, by the way, if you'd like to learn more about how the localization department can support you and our international customers, reach out, right?
Yeah, something that I think is very interesting and is very nice. I think it's a new trend, and I think that it's going in the right direction. Is that I see some more job openings requesting or write explicitly in the responsibilities of your job description of being in connection with the design team. No, I feel that maybe the next step will be starting the localization process from there, but I think that it's really good to have like a representative of the localization, globalization team at that particular stage, so a lot of issues can be flagged or like addressed before the the development starts. And I think that that's very good in the sense that the company saves money, the designer saves time, the developer saves time. So it's something that is not everything about AI and MT, you know,
sense
you can also need someone that knows different cultures and different languages and knows how different markets behave to say, hey, here you're using just the first name, just FYI, in certain Asian cultures, you will need to let the developer know that they need to grab really the name. So for those cultures, is the last name is used, or in certain cultures, you need the full name. No, there is not just first name or last name. Right. Things like that, that unless you are in the industry, you don't really know. No, you just assume that everyone is the same, and then you throw that, and then it's what you were talking about, the issues. No, and then at the end of the line, after almost 20 days that the designer finishes, then the developer finishes, and then the localization team finishes, then a linguist or reviewer, you know, like a language specialist, says, hey, we have here an issue for Poland. And then you go back, and the developer is like, why are you not telling me this at this time? We have to roll out this now.
We've all been there before. Well, alrighty, guys, I think it's time to start wrapping this up here today. We went longer than I was actually thinking we were going to go. That's good.
Yeah,
thanks.
I mean, for our first podcast, I mean, we talked a lot.
Yeah, so, well, thanks for the questions, everybody, in the chat there. So I'm going to take us out, Bettina. Carlos, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. And thank you for the work that you're doing publishing. If you guys want to check it out, it's guilt-ninjas.com, I think you said.
Yes.
Go check it out. It's just another great resource that we have in our industry. Add it to the list of resources that you follow. And of course, follow Bettina and Carlos on LinkedIn. Follow Guilt Ninjas on LinkedIn and follow Ninja on LinkedIn. What the heck? While you're over there, give us a follow as well. So, all right. Yes.
And thank you so much for having us, Tucker.
Oh, of course. Of course. It's my pleasure.
That was very nice. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. All right, ladies, gentlemen, chat, we are out of time for today. If you enjoyed this episode of NIMSY Live, join us next time. I think we're not on the calendar yet, but we'll be back in June after Loke World. We got some exciting stuff coming up. So make sure to subscribe to us so that you'll be notified when we schedule those episodes. I appreciate our guests today, Bettina and Carlos. I appreciate my colleagues here at NIMSY Insights doing all the hard work so I can have these interesting conversations. And finally, I appreciate you, the audience, joining us in chat and asking very intelligent questions today. And I look forward to next time. Cheers.